And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switch2wowbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.
Astronomy Cast, episode 516, Polar Vortices. Welcome to Astronomy Cast, our weekly facts-based journey through the cosmos where we help you understand not only what we know, but how we know what we know. I'm Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today. With me, as always, is Dr. Pamela Gay, a senior scientist for the Planetary Science Institute and the director of CosmoQuest. Hey, Pamela, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. And where are you right now?
I am in the visitor's office at the Planetary Science Institute's headquarters in Tucson, Arizona. It is a very boring room in a very exciting building.
Right. So you are a senior scientist for the Planetary Science Institute, and now you're a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute.
Exactly.
Right. And that's the thing that people don't realize, of course, is that in this new virtual world, Pamela's always on the move, normally working from home. But every now and then you get a chance to actually go into the office and hang out and visit with the people there. And I'll get into the weather in a second. But what's it like? I mean, how many people are, how big is the place?
So I haven't actually figured out how many people are located here. It's in the tents. I can tell you that much. The Planetary Right. Science Institute in general has over 100 PhDs and all their support staff. And this means that, like, Susie's going to be working at the Planetary Science Institute. Nancy's going to be working at the Planetary Science Institute. And part of the reason that I'm here is to work on transforming all of your donations, all you wonderful people out there in the audience, into offers of employment to all of our staff. So your Patreon contributions are the reason Susie has a job and can pay tuition for her daughter in college. So if you've thought about supporting us on Patreon and have never really done it, you need to go to Patreon now and help Susie get paid.
Perfect. All right. So it's cold right now. Okay, fine. Here on Vancouver Island, it's actually pretty warm. But for the rest of Canada and big parts of the U.S., it's terrifyingly cold. Colder than Mars or the North Pole cold. This is all thanks to the breakup of the polar vortex. What are polar vortices? How do they form? And where else do we find them in the solar system? So ironically, of course, where you were just days ago was at the heart of the polar vortex. How bad is it back at home? How, your husband, when you talk to him, what kind of frozen state is he experiencing?
So I really have survivor guilt this week. It has been getting to a wind chill of minus 25 Fahrenheit, which is minus tens of degrees centigrade. And it is so cold, our dogs are not allowed outside for more than 5 minutes because their eyeballs and noses and things like that will start to freeze in bad ways. And we're in St. Louis, where normally this time of year, it's right around freezing plus or minus a few degrees. And to go from right around freezing to an air temperature of, before the wind chill happens, about 0 degrees to plus or minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 15 degrees plus or minus a few. It sucks.
Yeah. We normally we hover like in the 3-4 degrees centigrade. What's that? In the mid 30s
yeah.
for for the Fahrenheit folks, we can have cold snaps that'll take us down to about minus 10, like a really bad winter cold snap is minus 10 Celsius, which is in the low teens, I guess, for you, or the aughts. But this polar vortex is hitting the folks in the U.S. Like, I've heard wind chills in Chicago of minus 55.
Yeah.
I've heard minus 55.
Okay.
And Winnipeg, which is just a really, really cold place, is experiencing just insanely cold weather. And they are blaming this on the polar vortex, or more specifically, the polar vortex not doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's moved. So what is a polar vortex?
Worlds like our own Earth that have variations in temperature between the equator and the pole will end up with these convective cells. This is super easy to see in images of Jupiter, where you see these bandings of lighter and darker material that are actually counter-rotating around the world. Well, here on Earth, we have a series of jet streams. We have the tropical jet streams and the polar jet streams. And these are demarking the areas where we have our own alternating bands, our own convective cells within the atmosphere. And ideally, you have this great, the pole is super cold, and you have this nice, low density, super cold, massive air that is counter-rotating at the top of the world, at the bottom of the world. There are jet streams on both sides that are locking those in. Then you have another band of warmer air, another band of even warmer air, and you have these alternating bands with these jet streams, and everything stays put because of thermodynamic differences. The colder the Arctic, the warmer the equator, the happier the planet.
And that's what happens normally. And we should, I'm sure people are going to want, you know, we should definitely sort of go down the rabbit hole for a moment just to talk about it's all gone horribly, horribly wrong right now. But then go back into more normality and sort of deal with it, what it's supposed to be. How has everything gone horribly, horribly wrong?
Well,
right now.
So the reason that you are in a good place in St. Louis, where you and I normally have about the same weather.
Yeah.
Is those Rocky Mountains serve as a buffer for you. You're on the correct side. And death for me, because the jet stream is sort of like, I don't know where to be. The temperature gradient isn't what it should be. And that blob of cold air sitting on top of the world, instead of being a tightly focused cyclone of air, has fragmented into multiple low density, low pressure pockets. And those pockets are wandering free, and they're coming my way instead of your way, because they're just drooping down those Rocky Mountains. The air coming off the Rockies is shaping where they end up going. And this isn't just a North American thing. We also find that the Ural Mountains in the Ural Mountains in Russia cause a similar effect to occur, where Siberia periodically also gets a polar vortex sitting on top of it. And it's just the jet stream no longer being correctly shaped, because there aren't the thermal gradients to drive where it hangs out as there should be.
And so you get this situation. I mean, I sort of think, and I don't know if this is the exact same situation, but you open the door to one of those big walk-in freezers, right? And warm air from where you are goes into the freezer, yeah, and the cold air spills out. And normally all of those temperature gradients, all of those spinning bands that are going across the planet that are routing around the landforms on the Earth are acting like this natural barrier. They are the walls of the freezer that are keeping that incredibly cold air properly up in the poles, and down in the poles where it belongs. But in this situation, I mean, you can see these simulations. NASA does these amazing simulations of where the wind patterns are going and where the warm air is and where the cold air is, and these beautiful, almost artwork like maps showing these arrows of where things are and temperatures and so on. And you can see these jet streams, which normally stay, they push up along, as you said, up along the the mountains and they curl away off into the ocean on both sides. You know, that's one of the reasons why Iceland is so reasonably warm is you get this jet stream that passes right above Iceland when it normally should be minus 40. It's freezing or just a little below.
And our oceans also hold on to the thermal reserves, which is why you can be so far north. You're roughly 400 and something, not 500, but you're a lot of miles north of Chicago and Milwaukee. And so even though you're more north than Chicago and Milwaukee, you never have that blistering cold weather those two cities get.
Yeah. And, you know, thanks to being beside the ocean. And so normally, just on a normal year, all of these things are in lockstep. And occasionally, I can remember what was about 3 or 4 years ago. Susie will tell us exactly when they were getting like minus 10 degrees in Atlanta, where she lives, and it was just mayhem and, you know, same situation. And that's normally a very warm place. And so you got this another situation where the polar vortex had fragmented and moved around. So let's address the elephant in the room. Yeah. You know, people have said, you know, where's our global warming? Everything is so incredibly cold. This is because of global warming, right? Yeah. This is a result of climate change.
And this is where we have to remember.
Maybe. Probably.
No, it is. Maybe. It flat out is. So the science of this is that as the average temperature of the planet increases, we're seeing the ices that normally cover the Arctic Sea are melting. And instead of reflecting light back up away from our world in wavelengths of light that are happy to radiate away, instead, the heat is getting sucked into the oceans that are no longer capped with that wonderfully reflective ice. The oceans are warming up. They're irradiating in the infrared, which does not escape through our atmosphere. And so instead of having this wonderful cold area that is reflecting all the warming light away, the ocean is absorbing the heat. The same is happening with the land. And we're also seeing the permafrost, the tundra, these areas of frozen Siberia, Alaska, these areas are melting. And so now the ice reserves, the temperature reserves of coldness in the soil is also going away. So now we have heat being trapped in the land. We have heat being trapped in the ocean. And we generally see the polar vortex lessen in summer. We always have seen, since we had satellites in the air, that some of the Arctic Sea broke up in the summer. And during the same period, we'd see the jet stream become more erratic in its behavior, dipping down further towards the south. And that jet stream ducking southward is a sign of a polar vortex that is no longer tightly confined, that has weakened and fragmented. And one way to think of this is if you've seen hurricane images, as that hurricane deteriorates into a tropical storm, it fragments into multiple pieces. And you can still see hints of the structure in that tropical storm, but it's only when it's a fully formed cyclone that you have that beautiful spiral structure. The polar vortex is actually a cyclone of air movement. It's just not a storm movement, but it has that same physical structure. And when the needed conditions aren't there, it fragments into multiple pieces. And just like as that hurricane turns into a tropical storm, you'll get bands of rain going in all directions. When the polar vortex fragments, you get blobs of cold air going in various directions. And it all comes down to what the thermal gradient is. And right now in the winter, we're not seeing that completely frozen terrain. We're not seeing that completely frozen Arctic Sea. And this means we don't have that amazingly cold thermal gradient, that amazingly strong vortex of cold air, and instead we have this fragmenting system.
Right. And so, I mean, for the people who are like, boy, I sure wish we could have some global warming right now. Don't worry. In the summertime, everything will be on fire and there'll be horrendous droughts.
Yeah.
So it's these extremes now where you get a winter that doesn't behave like a winter is supposed to, and you get a summer that isn't supposed to be, that doesn't behave like a summer is supposed to, and the two go hand in hand. So let's, I mean, you know, we don't want to, we freaked out about global warming and climate change in other episodes. So, you know, we'll save that for a future episode. So let's talk more about some of the science of these polar vortices, because we find these across the solar system. What are some other places where we see these polar vortices?
So Venus is one of the more intriguing ones because it doesn't have just a single polar vortex per pole like we have here on Earth. Rather, this slowly rotating world, it still has the effects that lead to a polar vortex, but it actually has a double vertex at its pole. Now, this is where it's important to remember that cyclones are caused by, you have two air masses at two different temperatures, one cold, one hot. And that freezer analogy you gave of, you open the door and you feel the cold air get displaced out towards you as the hot air rushes in. Now, in that case, you have this linear exchange of temperatures. With a rotating planet, the Coriolis force is like, no, I'm going to make you rotate. And that Coriolis force is what drives hurricanes, what drives the polar vortex to move the way it moves, and to give us these spiraling storm patterns. If you look at the current images coming down off of satellites like the Terra satellite, showing amazing storms coming off of the Great Lakes region. Now, with Venus, you still have the Coriolis force because it is still rotating, but its day is longer than its year. And this super slow rotation means that the Coriolis force is like, I think I'll rotate. I think I will do something. And it doesn't lead to this tightly focused storm such as we see here on Earth on top of both of our poles. They instead end up with this super cool double vertex.
And it's, I mean, there isn't anything right now, but we got some pretty great photos that came from the Japanese spacecraft that's at Venus right now. And I can't even say it. Katsuki?
I'm going to let you do that.
Yeah. And I'm sure someone is going to fix that. But you've got this, you know, you can't see it in the visible light. Like here, you can see the cloud movements and you can see, you know, with visible light. But with Venus, you need to use infrared to be able to see, peer through these really thick clouds. And you get these amazing, as you said, double polar vortices that sort of go around each other with all these other high-level clouds that are swirling around it. And so for the longest time, you know, the dog is freaking out upstairs. I apologize for anyone who can hear this. You get, you know, we thought that Venus was just dull and bland, that everywhere on the entire planet was the same temperature. And it is, but there are still in the upper cloud tops these really great movements, and it's still because Venus is turning. It has a tremendous atmosphere, and you get these motions. But the coolest ones are on, I think, Saturn.
Yes. So Saturn's we can't fully explain because they're actually hexagonal in shape, where there are standing waves, as best we can tell, built up that cause essentially flat sides going around the eye of the vortex. And here on Earth, we can't generally just look at a pole and go, yes, there's a polar vortex, because it's clear air that happens to be moving. It's like you can't see the wind unless there's clouds in it. And the cold air on Earth over the poles is super dry. It's only when that cold air sweeps across, for instance, the Great Lakes and picks up moisture off the Great Lakes and then buries Ohio, that lake effect snow of the dry air going over a warm body of water, picking up the moisture, dumping the moisture, then we can see it. So these Terra images we're seeing allow us to see the cold air picking up the water, clouds forming, Well, on worlds like Venus, where you have clouds everywhere, on worlds like Saturn and Jupiter, where you have clouds everywhere, the exact structure of these polar vortices is obvious in the images without having to model out the winds. Venus, you have to look in a different wavelength, but with Saturn, it's just there in visible light, actually allowing you to look down the eye of this polar cyclone and see deeper into the layers of this world's atmosphere.
I'm putting, for the people who are watching the live show, I'm just putting up a picture of it beside you so that they can see what this looks like. And it is just the weirdest. It's the weirdest thing because it is absolutely this hexagonal shape with swirling clouds and tiny storms, and then in the middle it just goes down to this
Hexagon.
hex, the hexagon, and you say it's a mystery, right? Like, we don't know
There's lots of
completely.
conflicting theories. The word standing wave is used pretty consistently. So whatever the physics is, it involves probably something that generates standing waves.
And people have been able to sort of simulate this when you have like you've probably seen this like a science center where you take this, there's like a big disc with some kind of material inside of it, and you spin it, and you get these interesting shapes in that from these fluids turning of different densities and so on. And so there is something going on, as you said, a standing wave that has something to do with densities and different kinds of fluids. And we see something kind of analogous on Jupiter as well. I think it has its own version
Yes, and we even
of
actually
its
see
own.
this on Mars sometimes. So Hubble has been able to image colossal polar clouds over the poles on Mars that shape out vortices. Here again, we have to wait for there to be clouds in the right place, but Mars, with its atmosphere, does sometimes put on a show.
I've got just a research article here talking about the stability of Mars' annular polar vortex. So, same kind of thing. Now, of course, they've got 1% the atmospheric density that we have here on Earth. So there's only so far that you're going to get. So, I mean, would you expect to find this on Titan? Literally any place that is rotating with an atmosphere, you would expect to find this kind of a structure.
It all comes down to how much of a temperature gradient do you get. And so with Titan, what I don't know is how the interplay of reflected light off Saturn, of its extreme distance from the sun, its small size, its tilt. I don't know how much that will drive vortices. So if it has them, they're probably I'm not going to say probably. I don't know. They could be wussy, they could be strong. It all depends on how all these different factors interplay. And what's interesting is most of the worlds we've talked about, you have cold polar vortices because the pole isn't exactly pointed towards the sun in general, and it's at such a great angle that the light that does hit it is coming in at a severe angle. And so when you look at these convective cells, the numbers of the convective cells are such that the pole is cold. But Saturn likes to fool us. And Saturn, with its hexagon, is the only warm polar vortex that a world has. So the question becomes, as we look at worlds and we go from planet to moon, are we going to find cold or warm? And these are things that, as people pour through all of the Titan data now that Cassini's over, what are they going to piece together and find?
And one of my sadnesses is that we don't have any spacecraft at Uranus and Neptune. And I would assume that both of these will be absolutely fascinating for future observations because with Uranus, the whole planet has rolled over on its side and it spends half the year with one pole facing the sun and then half of its year with the other pole facing the sun. What must that do where the rotation is kind of perpendicular to the way it's being illuminated from the sun? That must create some really bizarre
Coriolis
atmospheric effects.
effect, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, we see some of the storms on Uranus, but we really do need an orbiter to hang out there and spend a long time being able to orbit it. Of course, even just by following in on the plane of the ecliptic, it should come naturally into a nice polar orbit that would allow it to go around and see the North Pole and the South Pole and the North Pole and the South Pole. And then you get Neptune, which is farther out, colder, receives less heat from the sun. What kinds of atmospheric stuff is happening there? And all we see is we've got a couple of images that were taken by the Voyager spacecraft and the best that Earth-based telescopes can do. Those would be ideal places to go and understand.
And with Uranus, we just never get to see that far side that is not pointed at the sun. Just the orbits don't let us get there from here. Unfortunately, right now, the energy, the delta V required to go from on your way out to Uranus and Neptune to then going from going towards it to now being in orbit around it, that's a huge delta V. And no one's been willing to build the spacecraft that has the capacity to do the delta V for a get there quickly. And no one has the patience to build one for the get there slowly and require less energy to get into orbit.
Right. Yeah, and there are, I mean, I've reported on this several times. There's a couple of proposals in the works. Let's talk a bit about extrasolar planets, because what we're really finding with our discoveries, thanks to Kepler and now TESS and all of the other spacecraft, is the extremes that are out there. Would we expect to see extreme versions of polar vortices for some of these worlds? I'm thinking about things like hot Jupiters and you know, things that are tidally locked to their stars and things like that. Like, what kinds of unusual situations could we expect to see?
So I have a light, so I can really do this demo well. So if you have a rotational axis that is pointed towards your star, you're probably going to end up with something weird that doesn't involve strong polar vortices. If, however, you are perpendicular to your light, rotating around rapidly, so more rapidly than we generally see. So Jupiter has roughly a 9-hour, Saturn is again several hours in rotation. These rapidly rotating worlds see very strong polar vortices. So imagine having an Earth-like world that's rotating much faster. It's going to have much stronger polar vortices. It's going to have much stronger Coriolis forces. And that starts to get much more exciting, perhaps more exciting than you might wish to live on.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'd still like to see that.
And then you also imagine those worlds, those, like, for example, water worlds where they have no continents and that the planetary bands can go all the way around the planet. But you would almost expect then the polar vortices to be very well behaved, because you're not going to get these changes. You're not going to get a lot of movement north or south of as the jet streams attempt to move around.
And this is exactly what we see on Jupiter.
Yeah. Perfect bands in opposite directions, side by side by side, chopping up the planet into little slices.
It's our silly mountains and landscape that makes it so hard to predict the weather.
So we could have a nice, dependable winter weather system if we flattened all the mountains.
And made sure that the temperature gradients were constant.
Filled in the oceans, flattened out the mountains, and just made everything perfectly the same.
I think this is something that we just need to get on.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put that in our list of geoengineering suggestions.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Pamela. Enjoy the warmth.
I am. I really am.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Astronomy Cast, a nonprofit resource provided by the Planetary Science Institute, Fraser Cain, and Dr. Pamela Gay. You can find show notes and transcripts for every episode at Astronomy Cast. You can email us at info@astronomycast.com. Tweet us at AstronomyCast, like us on Facebook, and watch us on YouTube. We record our show live on YouTube every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific, or 1900 UTC. Our intro music was provided by David Joseph Wesley, the outro music is by Travis Searle, and the show was edited by Susie Murph.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pair.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.